It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. Brought to you by Mark Keitel with Realty First.
Everybody to the show live on Sunday. Full of you one here on News Talk WSB. We are online all the time, as always. ThinkGlink.com. ThinkGlink.com. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter. It is your passport to all things Glink, the ThinkGlink community. We are happening, so much happening actually as we speak. This week on the Equifax Personal Finance blog, we're looking at housing market predictions and home values that are continuing to sink and why that's happening. I think you'll find some news and interesting updates there as well. We've got some very interesting tax stuff going on. And then over in insurance, Linda Ray this week is talking about how the insurance market forces are changing the price point on insurance. Really interesting look at it as well. Over at MoneyWatch.com, it's been a very busy week. We've got a whole bunch of stuff up. This week, Coldwell Banker released a really interesting survey. We'll talk about that at the top of the next hour, about where what the most affordable and most expensive cities are for what they call family homes. They're looking at a four-bedroom, two- or three-bath house all over the country, and we looked at most affordable cities for family homes, most expensive cities for family homes, and then something, a topic I'm going to want to talk about with our guest who's coming up in just a moment, an interview with a professor, a mortgage professor, who believes that mortgage interest rates at any moment now are just going to jump up 3.5%. It is, I mean, actually, he doesn't think imminently, but he said over the next couple of years, he could see mortgage interest rates going from, say, 4.5% for a 30-year fixed all the way up to 7.5% for a 30-year fixed, which is probably putting every home buyer out there on, you know, in heart attack mode at the moment. But that's what he says. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We've got a great guest coming up in just a minute, Keith Gumbinger. He's vice president of HSH. They survey 2,000 mortgage lenders every week. We're going to talk all about the mortgage market today. Next hour, we've got Mike Rose with Wells Fargo coming back, a friend of the show, so we'll talk to him as well. Just to kick things off, this is interesting. Sam the Man pulled this great thing from Yahoo. I wonder if we can try and get it up on the site. Maybe we will for the show notes. He looked at the Dow Jones average from 1928 to 1944, so it encompassed the whole Depression. And you see where the stock market was and how high it was, and believe it or not, it hit a high in about 1929 at 350. Today we're 12,000, back then 350. But it fell all the way down to what looks like, I don't know, maybe 36 points in early 1933. And then it started working its way back up, and then it fell down again just after 1938 started. And then it really leveled off all the way through World War II. And as opposed to what is happening now, where we hit a high of 12,500, nearly 13,000 in 2008, dropped all the way down back to 6,900 or 6,600, back in March of 2009. And then it went all the way back up, and we're still basically going up. We haven't had that second dip. But other than, I would say, just a small minor number of how high we've gotten, the numbers, the way that these graphs and charts look, just are not that dissimilar. It's sort of interesting to kind of look and compare and see where we keep going up and where it leveled off around the early 1940s and what it took to get us out of that. Just fascinating. Okay, 404-872-0750, but we're not going to take your calls just yet. Keith Gumbinger joins me on the line. He's somebody I've known for a very long time. He's vice president of HSH.com. They survey retail lenders. Those are the lenders, mortgage lenders, that make loans to you. About 2,000 of them every week. They look at rates and terms and loans. But what I really like about what Keith does is on his HSH.com blog, he talks about the economy. And you can sign up for a little survey and discussion of that that comes out, I think, on Fridays. Keith, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
So let's talk a little bit about what HSH does to give everybody a little bit more context. You talk to retail lenders, and then you basically publish that information, right?
Sure. And we've got a survey staff here that makes calls and gathers information all week long, talking to loan officers and retail sales folks all around the country each week and gathering information on rates and terms and fees, getting their feedback on what sort of traffic activities are going on, and just about anything that's related to the retail mortgage market.
And what do you do with that information? Where do you gather it all? I know you send it to people like me, but what else do you do with it?
Well, we produce statistics. We do forecasting. Of course, our weekly commentary, you did mention that, our Market Trends newsletter. Folks can purchase surveys of data in their local marketplaces. We do analytics with it for certain clients and things of that nature.
Okay. So tell us what you're seeing. I mean, you seem like in the perfect place to kind of look out. I mean, let's start with the economy. Every week somebody accuses me of being a little bit of a bear, but what are you seeing out there?
Well, the economy has been pretty poor much of the spring. I mean, the recovery has faltered to some degree. You could certainly put that at the feet of, you know, slower employment growth and things of that nature. But the economy is pretty soft right now, and prospects for picking up anytime soon are pretty soft. And, of course, mortgage rates, related to what's happening in the economy, have worked their way back on down to, well, close to historical lows.
You know, I can't even believe how low mortgage interest rates are. I know they're well under 4% for a 15-year fixed, around 4.5% for a 30-year.
Around 4.5 for a 30-year. And, you know, if you've been around as long as I have and you remember the days of, you know, 17, 18, 19% interest rates on first mortgages, you know, some folks just can't really grab all the perspective on how low they actually are today.
I just keep telling people, in 1989, my husband Sam and I got our first place. It was a co-op, and our mortgage interest rate was 11.75%, and we felt very lucky to get it.
It was a bargain then?
I mean, at the time, 11.75% for a co-op, there were only four lenders in the whole city of Chicago that actually lent money to a co-op as opposed to a condo. There were more that did condos, and we paid a little bit of a premium for that, but it was just so hard to get a loan.
Well, it's hard to get a loan today, even for a lot of borrowers just looking at standard residential properties, let alone something which can be as challenging as finding a co-op loan.
Well, that's very true. So let's talk a little bit more about the economy. You know, definitely slower jobs growth, prospects are soft, and yet the Fed has said that they are not going to extend the QE2. It ends at the end of this month, and they're going to let it die out. And there's been a lot of talk about how that's really just propped things up more than we even know.
Well, there have been some concerns and some discussion that the Fed's program actually added something to GDP. There's an unknown amount of growth that the Fed's QE2 program actually added. I've seen reckonings anywhere from as little as 0.2% in GDP growth up to as much as 0.75%.
Wow.
But for whatever that contributed to the economy, you're right, it is coming to an end at the end of this month. And all that is going to serve to do is exacerbate to some degree the slowness that we're experiencing now. I mean, perhaps the only good news is that inflation pressures, which are still out there in the world, do seem to have leveled off somewhat, at least for the temporary time being. So even though growth has slowed, we have still and do still have some concerns that there is some nascent inflation forming out there.
You know what's sort of interesting about that? When I hear from my listeners, and I'm sure the lights are, they're just all going to be calling in at this, but they all feel like inflation's gone up quite a bit. I mean, once you start seeing gas prices jump up over $4 a gallon, I mean, that's just sort of a big milestone for them. But they also see their food prices going up. They see the costs of things that they use every day, you know, let alone the Fed's official inflation basket never seems to go up much. It hasn't for a while. But the things that they use in everyday life do go up. Medicine goes up. Gas goes up. Energy bills go up. Their lives, inflation's already happened.
Well, the interesting thing about the way inflation is measured is the kind of inflation we have right now, and that's your gas prices and your food prices and, drug prices, medical costs. Those things have a tendency to accumulate, and because they absorb so many spendable dollars, serve to actually slow the economy back down.
Right.
So this is kind of what we've been experiencing for much of the spring. After oil prices flared up to $115 a barrel and oil jumped over $4, many billions of disposable dollars that would have otherwise gone to support the broad economy had put into the gas tank. They've
right.
been burned up and disappeared. And so we have the, you know, kind of hangover going on right now of that run up to $4 gasoline.
Yeah, and it's still pretty high. I mean, up in Chicago, people are still paying $4.15, $4.19. It's not $4.75. I didn't think I'd be talking about gas prices in some parts of the country being $5 a gallon, like in Southern California.
No one wants to talk about that, to be honest.
It's pretty awful, but still.
A little fall off in gas prices probably will help to prop up some consumer spending as we move a little deeper into the summer. You know, it was a matter of instead of $40 a week for gas, consumers, you know, saw it go up to $80 a week for gas, and now it's fallen back to $65. Well, you know, $15 a week is helpful. Not as helpful as it would have been if it stayed at 40. So,
and summer we usually see higher gas prices anyway, and summer really hasn't even kicked in yet. I mean, for sure, weather-wise, it hasn't kicked in. It has in Atlanta, but you know, in the whole northern half of the country, it's rainy in 50s.
Well, when it comes, we'll be hoping that it actually gets here. That's pretty much how it's going to work out.
Get there, and gas prices don't go back up as we all start the summer driving season. All right, so that's sort of what's going on with some part of the economy. How are you guys seeing that translate into interest rates? Because my sense has always been that these interest rates are here only as long as everybody believes the economy is pretty darn slow.
Well, there's a couple of factors influencing interest rates down to where they are presently, not the least of which, of course, is the slowdown in the economy. I mean, the official numbers all point that out, and certainly consumer sentiment numbers have been pretty dark for now in a very extended period of time. Almost no sense of recovery among consumers or that things are getting better. And I mean, it's hard to get a lot of optimism when there's so many houses for sale in your market, high gas prices, all the things, you know, weak job markets, friends that are out of work, things of that nature. It's really hard to get any sort of optimism going forward in that regard.
So you agree that I think you're agreeing that mortgage interest rates are low until all these other pieces start to pull up.
Well, that's the first consideration. Now, there is also some external factors that are serving to drive interest rates downward, and that most notably is the issues which are going on overseas. You see it in the Greek debt markets, for example, and investors, global investors, are looking at the kinds of issues going on in their own marketplaces, slowing economies or challenged economies. And they're sending money our way. I mean, money is coming here to buy U.S. Treasuries, and, you know, the safe gold standard investment in the world. And that fear of loss, that fear of difficulty, is also serving to influence our interest rates downward to some degree as well. So we're benefiting from troubles elsewhere in the world, some of them more transient than others. We're benefiting, if you want to think of it that way, of a poor economy here, all serving to keep interest rates low. That's very beneficial for home buyers, especially beneficial for refinancers. Unfortunately, there are still so many challenges, so many borrowers that can't access today's low, cheap financing markets because they have no equity in their homes, because they've lost jobs the last couple of years, don't have the income to support the mortgages they have now, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and that's really the other side of this, is that, you know, the realtors are all saying, listen, it's the lender's fault now because we have people who want to buy houses and they can't qualify for them. But I'm not actually sure how many people are lining up wishing they could buy if only their credit score wasn't a 550.
Well, if you can get just a sort of minimum standards in this marketplace, FICO of just a little above 580, which by today's reckoning is still pretty terrible credit, and if you can scrape together just a small down payment, put a little skin in the game, 3.5%, for example, you could qualify for an FHA-backed mortgage.
So except a lot of lenders aren't doing them for 580. I mean, it's interesting you say that, and I say it all the time because that's what FHA tells me, but if you go out and actually try to find a lender, a lot of them are not that interested in a 580 credit score.
Well, that's the 580 is kind of the official boundary.
Yeah, but it's really more like 620, right?
But it is more like 620.
Yeah.
A lot of lenders are very afraid of loss because, and part of this comes from us, from you and I, from the taxpayers, have leaning on these systems, leaning on the FHA to not lose money, leaning on Fannie and Freddie to not lose more money.
Well, you know, every month when Fannie and Freddie send their little bills for $60 billion in losses, I mean, it's kind of a little bit hard to swallow as a taxpayer.
So
it's just a small little check you have to write this month, Uncle Sam.
It's a little discouraging, to be honest. It is. So you can't fault lenders for wanting to protect themselves against loss. And frankly, some of the borrowers at a 580 FICO level are very likely to cause losses.
That's
so
true.
They're protecting themselves by these kind of credit add-ons and you know, being a little bit more wary about making you go through more hoops, more appraisals on the property, more documentation.
And all the rest, which we're going to get to. Keith Gumbinger is joining us today. He's Vice President of HSA. FHH.com. They survey 2,000 mortgage lenders a week. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We're going to come back and have more of a conversation with Keith on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
When the night has come.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. We're in the middle of an amazing conversation. I hope you'll stick around for it. Keith Gumbinger is here. He's vice president of HSH.com. They are mortgage publishers, and they survey 2,000 mortgage lenders every week on rates, terms, information. They do a tremendous job looking at the economy and talking about how all of that impacts mortgage rates. It's just a fantastic conversation. Coming up in a little bit, we want to take it more to the person, more to you. We have a friend of the show, Mike Rose from Wells Fargo, coming in to talk a little bit about what he is seeing going on face-to-face with consumers and how you can change what you're doing to have a better shot at getting your loan approved. We're also going to ask him, I'm going to ask him a little bit more about investing in mortgages, which I think is just really underserved right now, especially with nearly 40% of all home sales going on to investors. So we're going to talk about that. And then a little bit later in the show, Mark Tytel of GetOutStartOver.com is going to be back to talk about what is going on in his neck of the woods this week with regards to foreclosures and short sales. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. Our number 404-872-0750. We are online all the time, 24-7, 6,000 pieces of information for you for free on thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to check out Money Watch this week. We profiled a new Coldwell Banker survey, which maybe I'll have a chance to talk about today. We profiled the most affordable and most expensive homes, cities in the country for family homes. That's defined as, I don't know, four bedrooms, two or three baths. Where can you go? What is it going to cost you? Most expensive, most affordable. And coming up next week, we're going to look at vacation homes and for, you know, family-sized vacation homes. So if you want to take several generations away with you, we're going to look at that as well. And then chatting a little bit on the on our Equifax personal finance blog this week, Linda Ray looks at how the insurance industry is changing, and there are different factors in the economy that are forcing interest rates to change, your insurance premiums to change. Take a look at that at Equifax.com/BLOG. We have Keith Gumbinger with us today. He's vice president of HSH.com. They are a mortgage publisher, mortgage information publisher. Every week, his team surveys 2,000 mortgage lenders, plus or minus a few, talking about rates and terms and what's going on in their backyard. And he's with us today to talk a little bit about the economy, which is what we've talked about the last time. And I want to turn and talk a little bit about access to credit, because I think that what's happening, and it is true, the realtors are complaining that mortgage lenders really aren't approving their clients, and that when they get turned down 75% of the time, it's because of the appraisal. So I guess the appraisers are in trouble as well with the realtors. But Keith, what do you see going on in terms of access to credit? It's really not the same everywhere, is it?
Well, no, it's interesting to note that once you're out into the marketplace and you're shopping for your mortgage and making some phone calls, you're going to find that the availability of credit is highly variable from one place to the next, from one side of town to the other. And that is true, especially if you're looking for products other than a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. If you decided you want to get involved in looking for an ARM, or if you need a jumbo mortgage, you'll find lenders that are aggressive in their pricing and other lenders who don't offer product at all. You'll find lenders who are more than willing to talk to you and those who just say, you know, there's not much I can do for you. So it is highly variable from place to place. The access to credit is variable, as well as the price of credit. Some folks are very aggressive in their pricing, trying to get new business in the door. Other folks are pricing defensively. It's almost, if you really want a mortgage, sure, we'll make you one, but we'd really rather not.
So here's what I think is hilarious. The federal government is backing now 90% of all mortgages. You got all the Fannie Mae mortgages and all the Freddie Mac mortgages and all the FHA mortgages. It's like 92% of all mortgages out there. Why would the pricing be different?
It's a simple matter of some products being able to be sold easily to the secondary market. Sure, Fannie and Freddie and FHA are more than willing to back long-term fixed-rate mortgages. When you step outside of those and you get off into jumbos, not everybody makes enough of them to sell them profitably. Some products are better suited to be put on the lender's own books, on their own portfolio. That's the case with a lot of ARMs and a lot of jumbos. And a portfolio is a very individualized thing, whether you're an individual investor or whether you're a bank. So how aggressively you want to go after that kind of business or that kind of investment definitely skews what you're willing to pay for it.
But what's interesting, Keith, is that even among the retail lenders, I mean, you have to really shop around these days because Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Citi, all doing Fannie Freddie loans, all have very different pricings for mortgages. Then you've got credit unions. You've got online lenders that have now thrown into the mix. And it's just interesting to me when the loans are ultimately backed by the federal government, the price, I keep telling everybody, even though the pricing should be standard across the, you know, across the whole swath, it isn't anymore. It's still very different, but they're all selling the same loans to Fannie, Freddie, and FHA.
Well, it's no different than any other retail product in the world, right? You can buy
sure.
a pair of blue jeans at Macy's, or you can buy a pair of blue jeans at Costco, and you'll find the difference in price. It's the same product, but differences in the overhead cost, differences in compensation, differences in the way they run their business,
right.
the desirability of it, how well they can leverage their suppliers, it all plays into it.
Where would you where do you find across the country the biggest variability in rates? So, you know, we're in Atlanta, for example, and I know you look at the Atlanta market just like you do all the other major markets. But if you look at Atlanta, you know, are rates pretty standard? Or across the country, no matter what market you're in, you could swing a half a point for the same rate, same credit, same program, same everything, you could swing a half a point or more on a particular 30-year loan, depending on who you go with. And
most,
what do you see?
Most marketplaces, you'll find spreads of half a percentage point. For some products, it's even more than that, from the best available kind of price and the not-so-best available kind of price. Depending upon what product you're looking for, I mean, the differences are most narrow on the conforming 30-year fixed. You might find quarter percentage point differences from place to place to place. You get off into jumbo 10-1 ARMs, for example. You might find lenders in the 4% range and those in the 10% or 8%, 9-10% range. So
crazy.
Really wide disparities in pricing depending upon how efficient these lenders can be with their products.
All right, let's talk about jumbos for a minute. I mean, California's screaming because they're going to lower the amount that the Fed will back on those loans, so that it goes more into the jumbo market. A couple of years ago, there was no jumbo loan market. You literally couldn't get one unless you put about 50-60% down in cash or just buy down all the way to 417. But, you know, the jumbo market has opened up quite a bit. What are you seeing out there?
Well, things have improved very measurably over the last couple of years. I mean, you're right. Back in 2008, we had a complete hard shutdown in the jumbo market. You literally could not get a jumbo mortgage virtually any place. But as we've kind of progressed forward, things have loosened up a little bit. Some of the bigger lenders have started to make profits again. Profits mean interest in making loans again, especially to borrowers that are probably among the best well-heeled and the best suited in the country to take loans right now. So the market has opened up for jumbo mortgages, and the price of jumbo mortgage money has slowly but steadily come down. At its worst, a jumbo mortgage would have cost you about almost 2 percentage points more. 2% more
wow.
than a conforming loan. Right
mm-hmm.
now, that difference is about 50 basis points.
Which is a half a percent.
Half percentage point. So looking at that, the normal differential is about a quarter, thereabouts, but we have improved very appreciably over the last couple of years. Now, that jumbo conforming, that expanded conforming, sometimes they call them agency jumbos, the jumbo mortgages that Fannie and Freddie could buy will be reduced later on this year. By the end of September, the maximum loan you can get from Fannie or Freddie will fall from $729,750 down to about $625,500. So borrowers that find themselves between that 625 and 729 are going to be exposed to higher interest rates. That's the bad news. The good news is they're only slightly higher interest rates, and it probably shouldn't be enough to deter people from buying homes, although it probably is enough of a deterrent to turn off some people from refinancing.
Well, refinancing is a little bit different right now. I mean, it would be nice. It seems like people who would be able to refinance, though, or who got a couple of years ago, had to pay 10 or 13% for a jumbo loan. And, you know, this is still a big enough drop for them to make it worthwhile, I would think.
The opportunities are still very, very good. I mean, even with a slightly higher interest rate available to you, all that means is the value of your deal may be diminished somewhat, but it's not eliminated.
Yeah, it's not eliminated, but what is right now? Tell me a little bit about the, when you go, I want to go back to how you talk to lenders every week before we sort of run short of time. When you talk to them and they talk about programs, I know that the vast majority of people are going with the 30-year fixed and the 15-year fixed. What are they saying about those programs? What else is becoming, what's the third most popular? Are people doing the 5-1 ARMs that start at like 2.68%?
Yep, third most popular product would definitely fall into that 5-1 ARM.
Okay.
Those products have a fixed interest rate for the first 5 years and are available at some fantastic interest rates, certainly enough to be make a compelling argument that maybe, just maybe, an ARM might be in your future if you're considering refinancing or if you're looking for a purchase. The issue with an ARM, of course, is that you need to be careful and know what risks you are accepting. With interest rates starting at rock bottom rates, as they would be, there's really only one place for them to go in the years ahead. So you're going to want to prepare yourself for the eventuality of higher interest rates. And before you jump in with both feet because the payment is great, make sure you can afford tomorrow's payment, not just today's.
Well, that's a great point. I think it's a great point, period. One thing I think people don't understand is that ARMs typically have a fixed amount that they can rise. So it's usually 5 or 6%. What are you seeing most often?
Most common is a 5% limit on that first adjustment. So what you're looking at is if you've got an interest rate that started at 3%, for example, you'll have that for the next 5-year period. The worst possible case you'll ever face is 8%. So, I mean, this is kind of one of those known knowns. You can sit right down with a mortgage calculator or one you might find on our website and run the numbers. How much mortgage is going to be left after 5 years? When my interest rate resets, how much would my payment rise at a maximum? So you can really kind of look at your budget and know whether or not it could be scary or whether or not you're going to be okay.
Well, one thing that I think people don't realize is at the end of 5 years when it converts, you convert based on the equity, the balance that you have left, correct? You don't convert based on the total amount of the loan.
Nope, just what remains.
So if you pay, so let's just use some easy numbers because it's Sunday morning and my brain's a little slow. I always joke, not enough caffeine. But if you had a $100,000 loan and after 5 years now you have, let's say, $92,000 left, you convert. The interest rate, if it goes up, is still on the $92,000.
That's correct.
If you prepay that loan down to, say, $80,000 over the 5 years, you would convert, and it would, whatever the interest rate was, it would be at the $80,000 that's left.
Absolutely. There's no doubt you can minimize the impact of a rising interest rate environment by prepaying your mortgage before you get there.
That's great.
So if your loan is smaller when the interest rate goes up, of course, your monthly payment would be affected less, and that can provide you a little bit of comfort, if you will. And borrowers who might be in the marketplace today and look at a 30-year fixed and say, sure, I can afford that, but this 5-1 ARM is a compelling argument. If you're very disciplined and can save at least some of the difference in your monthly payment between what you would have spent on the 30-year fixed and what you will spend on the 5-year ARM, you can build yourself a little mortgage subsidy account, either paying down your loan so the loan balance is smaller, or at the end of 5 years, if your payment does rise substantially, you'll have a little bank account, a little nest egg. You can draw down each month a little bit to ameliorate the effects of that rising payment on your budget.
We're talking to Keith Gumbinger of HSH.com. They are a very large mortgage publisher. They survey about 2,000 mortgage lenders every week. You can reach him at HSH.com, and I encourage you to go and take a look at his blog. It's terrific. They do a nice job with the economy as well, and they do a little economic trends report every week that you can sign up for on the website. It comes out, I think, on Fridays. When we come back, I want to ask Keith about something very peculiar here in Atlanta where property prices, I think this might be a problem for Las Vegas, maybe Florida as well. Property prices have fallen so far, and some people feel like they still have farther to go, that some people are having trouble finding loans to buy houses that only cost $40,000 or $50,000. Lenders aren't always interested in small numbers. So let's see if we can get Keith to give us a little eye-opening exercise to help you figure out where you're going to finance that $50,000 property. I'm Elise Glink. You are listening to the Elise Glink Show on AM 750, now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey, and midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to talk with our friend of the show, Mike Rose, with Wells Fargo, continuing our discussion on what's going on in the world of mortgages and what you can do to actually get the mortgage that you need. We're talking right now with Keith Gumbinger. He's vice president of HSH.com. They survey 2,000 lenders every week. So, Keith, before we went to the break, I asked you a question. What do you do when you buy, and there are so many of these homes in Atlanta, $50,000 house, and lenders really aren't that interested in financing anything under, say, $100,000. What do you do?
Well, the thing about small loan amounts, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 loan amounts, is that from a lender's perspective, there's just as much paperwork writing a $100,000 or $200,000 or $400,000 or $600,000 loan. But there's just not as much profitability in it to write small loans. A lot of work for not really a lot of compensation. Lenders often add premiums, they'll add a markup to the interest rate for small loans, or they'll add a markup to the fees for small loans to try to recapture some of that profitability. But frankly, it's still not all that compelling. So if you're looking out in the marketplace, you're going to want to go find a mortgage lender who's particularly aggressive, or a salesperson who's particularly aggressive, who's willing to write small business. And you're going to have to go shop around for that. I mean, you may have to hit virtually every outlet in your marketplace to find somebody who is interested in working with small loan amounts and is willing to make up their commissions or willing to make up their compensation going on a volume basis rather than a deal-by-deal basis.
Yeah, it's really. I think it's really hard. Credit unions are usually a good place for this kind of stuff. If you can join one or you belong to one, I find local banks might be a good place. And it's particularly hard in a place like Atlanta where banks have taken such a massive loss on real estate. I mean, a lot of developers have gone out of business here.
And a lot of small banks have gone out of business as well. So it definitely it's a challenged environment for small loans. But, yeah, you need to be diligent and keep at it.
Yeah, it's just another little wrinkle in the economic pie for housing. Definitely. Keith Gumbinger has been with us this hour, HSH.com. I know he'd love to hear from you folks. If you have questions for him, you can find him on his blog, HSH.com. Hit the blog. You can comment. You can send him an email. I'm sure he'd be happy to answer your questions. Coming up next, we have our good friend, Mike Rose from Wells Fargo, talking a little bit about what he's seeing going on. I'm going to ask him the same question about low prices, and because he's here in Atlanta, I think he might have some really interesting information, so stay tuned for that. Then Mark Tytel stops by to talk about what's happening in the world of foreclosures and short sales this week in Atlanta. It's all going to be good. We're continuing. We want to hear from you. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
We'll leave the world behind, baby.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. Brought to you by Mark Tytel with Realty First.
Everybody to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. The name of the game today is mortgages. You can find a lot of mortgage information online at my website, 24/7, 365, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. We have all kinds of really exciting stuff coming up over the next few months, and then maybe another big event in January. You know, we kind of took a little break this year. But I have an idea for an event, and I'm going to be exploring it, and hopefully we'll have something to share with you before very long, like maybe when I'm, you know, back right after the 4th of July. We will see how that goes. Okay, we have, before we get to our guest for this hour, our friend Mike Rose from Wells Fargo, I want to talk for a little bit about a new survey that came out this week from Coldwell Banker. Coldwell Banker surveyed 2,300 of North America's most expensive and most affordable housing markets. And they came up with a really interesting top 10 list. So and they were looking specifically at homes that they call are family homes, four-bedroom, two-bath homes. Newport Beach, California, led the list of the most expensive U.S. real estate markets second year in a row. Average home listing price. Now, this isn't what they're selling for. This is just what they're listed for. The average listing price for a four-bedroom, two-bath house in Newport Beach, California, was $2.5 million. Wow. Most affordable housing market in the U.S. for the same kind of house, Niagara Falls, New York, which has an average home listing price of $61,000. Think about that. $2.5 million for a four-bedroom, two-bath house in Newport Beach, California versus $61,000 for a similarly sized house, although clearly not with as good a weather. On the other hand, you can go on the Maid of the Mist as much as you want. $61,000, that is a really huge difference, and it's just one of the many interesting findings in this report, which you can find online at coldwellbanker.com. But I did want to run down for you America's most affordable markets and some stats about that, because it turns out that Georgia really plays a role. In fact, Georgia has three of the most affordable housing, most affordable homes, list price, Riverdale, College Park, and Lithonia. But let me start at the top. So Niagara Falls, most affordable home. Riverdale, Georgia is number two. Coolidge, Arizona, number three. It's home to the Casa Grande Ruins National Monument. That was the first archaeological reserve created in 1892. College Park, Georgia, number four, well-known for Ludacris and Monica. Then we have Detroit, Michigan. It's interesting that Detroit is like halfway in this list. Hastings, Florida, average annual temperature of 69 degrees, absolutely lovely. But, you know, not expensive to live there. Cleveland, Ohio, home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Lithonia, Georgia, is the heart of Georgia State, granite quarrying and viewing region, apparently. I did not know that. Trotwood, Ohio, is located near Wolf Creek, and everybody likes to fish who goes there. And Sioux City, Iowa, home to many parks, including Stone State Park, which is really interesting. Now, in terms of affordability, there are 24 U.S. markets in the Coldwell Banker survey that reported listing prices of less than $100,000. That's really amazing. And there are 1,545 markets where the average list price is less than $300,000. Remember, this is just for four-bedroom, two-bath homes. What's it going to cost you? If you have a $200,000 property with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage at 5%, with a 20% down payment, you might pay just less than $860 a month. Unbelievable. That's at Newport Beach. Now, if you did the same house in Niagara Falls, you'd be paying just $260 a month. Nice. Nice. Might as well just charge it on your credit card. I want to introduce Mike Rose, friend of the show. He's been on a whole bunch of times. Mike has been in the mortgage business for a really long time. He's working for Wells Fargo. His website, MikeRoseMortgage.com. If you've come to any of our foreclosure events, Mike's been there. He's been just a great friend to me personally, and it's nice to have you back, Mike. Welcome.
Oh, Elise, always love being on your show, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
So, you know, what do you think about this? I mean, you know, Georgia, three of the most affordable home, you can buy four-bedroom, two-bath house for, you know, each of these markets has, you know, Riverdale, College Park, Lithonia, buy a four-bedroom house for an average list price of less than $80,000, all within 20 miles to Atlanta, What do you think?
And it's absolutely true. And I do a number of deals in those areas, a number of loans. People, for even a lot of first-time home buyers, finding, you know, for years people talked about affordable housing. Congratulations, we now have it. We have affordable housing, particularly for first-time home buyers. And think about, I know many of your listeners are not necessarily first-time home buyers, but they're looking for investment property. And you think about the cash flow on an investment property, you're buying something for less than $80,000. I mean, what are you going to rent that for? In many cases, $600, $700, $800 a month. So you're going to more than make the mortgage payment. I know a lot of your folks, have money invested in a number of areas, and they would consider some of them maybe taking some cash and going and buying some of these properties. And I'll tell you what, cash is king. You go out buying these houses with cash, you're going to get some pretty good deals right now if that's what you're planning on doing.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
I think people are getting absolutely amazing deals. I just think that there's so much that's going on there. You know, people, as you really well point out, I mean, you buy a $50,000 house, even if you get a $40,000 mortgage, I mean, the cash flow has got to be tremendous. I mean, yes, price might go up, price might go down, but if you're more than covering your costs, I mean, it's a good deal.
Yeah, and the only weird thing that we're finding in those price ranges, I'm finding that, you know, when somebody goes and buy a $50,000 house, $60,000 house, in the old days we used to calculate property taxes like 1%, 1.25%, maybe 1.5% of the sales price. Sometimes I've seen people buy an $80,000 house and the property taxes end up being $4,000 a year, because at some point that house is appraised at $150,000, $200,000.
Wow.
So people have to immediately appeal their taxes when they get into the house, and that's kind of the only downside of doing it. Sometimes you have to deal with that issue, as well as if you're buying a foreclosed property. The only thing that I would advise you, and most of the people I'm dealing with now are buying foreclosures and short sales, have a lot of patience, because you're going to get a great deal, but you're also going to have to deal with a lot of bureaucracy on the other end. So just don't think you're going to walk in and be able to close one of these deals in 10 or 15 days. Not going to happen that way.
I'm sorry, can you close any deal right now in 10 to 15 days? Really, really, Mike, let's be honest.
I'm trying.
Because I'm hearing like 6 to 8 weeks. Are you doing 15 days?
Here's what I tell people, and I tell people 30 days to close a loan.
Now, really? You're able to do that in 30 days? I am impressed.
Now, wait a minute. 30 days provided we don't have any issues. and those issues may have nothing to do with us as a lender. Occasionally, we do have problems on our end. I mean, I'm not going to, sugarcoat that. Sometimes we do. But a lot of times, the big issue we run into that keeps us going beyond the 30 days, we do an appraisal of the property, and guess what? It turns out there are repairs that have to be made. That delays the property. I just had a deal today. A guy is buying his first house. He's buying a foreclosure. He's spending $50,000, a nice house, really, and we've done the appraisal. Everything looks great. But guess what? We just got title back, and title says there are federal tax liens against this property.
Oh, no.
That's
really
going to delay us closing by another 120 days. This guy's lease is done at the end of this month. So, he has to make a serious decision whether what he wants to do, prolong his lease at his current apartment, or maybe not buy this house at all. But either way, he has a big decision to make at the end of this month. So there's so many moving parts that are out of our control. You know,
why didn't he know about this federal tax lien? I mean, couldn't he have gone, I don't know, and pulled up should he have pulled up the tax records? Is that where we're at now? Shouldn't have the? You said it was a foreclosure, or
this particular property, and it was a Fannie Mae foreclosure. You would think Fannie Mae.
They should have wiped those liens. That's what they're not doing anymore.
Well, Fannie Mae, I'm sure, did its own title search. Sometimes these liens don't show up right away. Sometimes they show up, even I've had these liens show up. I had a deal a couple months ago. It wasn't a Fannie Mae. It was a short sale, but I had tax liens show up at the last minute, a day before closing, because the closing attorney found out about them because they were closing another deal from the same seller on another property. So strange things happen. And you can't expect the buyer of a property to do a title search. I mean, how would they do it? It's really up to the closing attorney to do that. And they did it. And guess what? We have federal tax liens that have to be resolved. before you can close.
I have to tell you, you know, it's really, the whole point of a foreclosure was to clean up the title. When you foreclose, you're supposed to do that.
Well, they will. They just won't close the loan until it's cleaned up.
Right.
This particular issue is because it's a federal tax lien, and you know, I'm not the attorney. I forget the exact terms, but I think they call it the right of redemption. You might know the term, where it takes 120 days to clear it up, and they will clear it up. It's just not going to happen at the end of this month.
So this guy's moving in with you because you are the full-service mortgage broker, right?
Oh, sure. I have like the whole apartment complex filled with people that I couldn't close loans for.
I'm sure. Oh, God, Mike. It's got to be so incredibly frustrating for you.
It is. There are some days that are bad. You know, and we began this, you and I talked off the air before we went on, and said we got to keep positive. And really, there's so many things to keep positive about. It's a great time to buy. But people, the expectation level has to be when you're buying in this environment, you just have to have patience and expect the unexpected. Once you get the deal, I mean, once this guy closes in the house, he's getting a wonderful home, and this one is not in one of the areas you mentioned, but this one is in Gwinnett County, which is a great area, for $50,000.
So what? You can't say anything bad about that. We're talking with Mike Rose. He's a mortgage broker with Wells Fargo, MikeRoseMortgage.com. We're going to talk a little bit more about his on-the-ground experiences, and then coming up in a few minutes, we've got Mark Tytel talking about foreclosures and short sales. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Klink Show. We're talking about mortgages today, and we have with us in the studio Mike Rose, our good friend from Wells Fargo, MikeRoseMortgage.com. Mike, we were talking about some of your deals. What's the most frustrating deal you've had this week?
Well, I think I was telling you before the break about the $50,000 deal. We had several deals this week.
You're telling me it's really hard to pick, right?
Well, I'll tell you what, and you're going to ask for. I'm going to stay positive. Let me ask for. I'll give you some honesty here too. It's honestly every deal that you go through has some layer of weirdness or difficulty.
What is that? Like, what are you seeing exactly?
Well, like I mentioned, we have title.
Yep.
Which we had a problem with that. Appraisals are a big problem because often properties don't appraise for what they're selling for,
right.
Or if you're trying to refinance them, they don't have enough equity in them in order to refinance them. So we run into that quite a bit. And then you're under the gun with people because what happens is you have a client that maybe is really depending on you or depending on them being able to move into a house because they're leaving their other house. Then they have the moving
truck. So it's like a timing issue.
Yeah, they got the moving trucks on the way and all that. And there's only so much you as a loan officer can control as part of this process, and it keeps getting more and more difficult. And yet you are the face of the deal. So the customer, if the customer has a bad experience, whether it's your fault or not, they see you as the face of it. So it's really a challenge right now to communicate with the customer, let them know what's going on, have the ability to deliver both good news and bad news to them in a timely manner, because the worst thing you can do is delay delivering bad news.
Oh, gosh, you don't want to do that.
No, so you need to tell them right away so they understand what the problems are. And what concerns me more than anything is I do not want to discourage people from buying houses, because what happens is people hear, oh, it's so hard to do it. It's so hard to get it done. Yeah, sometimes it quite often is. But at the end of the day, look what you've accomplished done this.
Look what you have. You have a $50,000 house that in a few years will probably appraise back up significantly above where that is, hopefully anyway. And you're paying like less than nothing for it because, as we were just discussing with Keith Gumbacher of HSH a few minutes ago, mortgage interest rates are near historic lows. So there's a lot to be happy about. But we're going to keep talking with Mike Rose. MikeRoseMortgage.com. He works with Wells Fargo. He's been a friend of the show for a long time now. We've been on the air, I don't know how long. You've been around at least nearly that long, coming on every now and again. So stay tuned for that. We've also got Mark Tytel coming up in a few minutes with GetOutStartOver.com and what's happening in his shop this week for foreclosures and short sales. I'm Elise Blank. Stay tuned to News Talk 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glenk is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Ain't nobody worried. Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glenk Show, 404-872-0750, online all the time. ThinkGlenk.com, THINKGLINK.com. We are having a great conversation about what's going on in Atlanta with mortgages with my good friend Mike Rose of Wells Fargo. You can find Mike at MikeRoseMortgage.com, MikeRoseMortgage.com. That will take you to his Wells Fargo page, and all of his contact information is there. If you've been to any of our foreclosure events, you know that Mike does a lot of foreclosure and short sale loans, and so if you're looking for that kind of stuff, he's a great person to get to know. So, Mike, in the break, we were talking a little bit about making home affordable refinance loans. Mm-hmm. I can't believe you're actually doing any of those. Like, almost nobody gets them. How is that working for you?
Well, I mean, I'm not talking about the loan modification. I'm talking about the refinances, which, and actually, and that's a whole other issue for another day. But when I did quite a bit of these in the fall of last year, and basically, what they are, if you happen to have a Fannie Mae or a Freddie Mac loan, and a lot of people don't even know if they have a Fannie or Freddie Mac loan, if you're a little upside down, we'll go up to 125% of the value of the property and refinance them. So if you have a rate right now that's above 6%, something in that range, and you're looking to drop it below 5, you know, and there are hits to the rate depending on what the loan to value is on the property, you can refinance that. Your best bet is you'll get the best deal if you go to whoever your current lender is. Because, for example, I work for Wells Fargo. If someone comes to me who works for Wells Fargo, who has a Wells Fargo loan, and you're Fannie or Freddie, you may qualify for making home affordable, and you also, in that situation, you wouldn't necessarily even need to do an appraisal of the property.
Well, that's key.
And that's very important. And the other thing we don't ask for, in many cases, we don't ask for income or asset documentation, so it becomes basically a stated income loan, which I know you think we don't do anymore, but in this case...
No, you don't officially do those, do you?
No, but we don't call them stated income. We call them something else. But anyway, that's making home affordable. So if you have a loan through Wells, I would suggest you contact Wells. You can contact me for those. If you have a loan through B of A or any of the other major lenders, I would contact them and make sure... And find out if you qualify. And what the
who do you ask for? Because seriously, when you call and you say, I want the making home affordable refinance, I think you mostly just get like who are you supposed to ask for?
Well, personally, the way I would handle it is...
do you want to actually go into a branch and talk to people?
Who what they're doing either.
Okay.
You really need to find a good local loan officer for any of those branches. You can do that through a Google search. And I know everybody who works for most of the major lenders. Not everybody, but...
So you should call Mike Rose or go to MikeRoseMortgage.com, and he's just going to direct you with phone numbers is what I'm hearing here.
No, I'm telling you. No, that's fine. I'm telling you, if somebody comes to me and they have a Bank of America loan, I'll tell them who to contact at Bank of America. How's that for for fairness.
And you know what? I think that that's actually amazing customer service, and I think it speaks very highly of you because you spent a lot of years at Bank of America, and you know those people.
I do. I did that today, but don't tell anybody I did that. You know, just between, that's our little secret, okay?
Yeah, you, me, and 100,000 people listening to the show today. No problem.
I've always believed you got to do the right thing by the customer. It's not just about selling a loan. So.
But the real lesson is that really, if you have one of these loans, you have a Fannie Freddie loan, mm-hmm. you really need to call the lender directly as opposed to cross lenders. You really just want to go to your lender.
Right. And well, you can do cross lenders, but I would start with your lender to see what they offer first. Because if you go cross lenders, very often they'll make you do an appraisal if you do cross lenders. Your current lender probably won't make you do an appraisal. I'm also seeing a lot of people going, and very smart people who obviously listen to you and Clark, a lot of them are converting from 30-year to 15-year mortgages, and they can do that using this program.
I didn't know you could do that. Aren't they just rewriting the whole loan?
It's a refinance. So basically what they're doing is that you're going from a new loan from a 30-year to a 15-year. And then I'm also seeing, and this is not part of this program, guess what's really becoming popular all of a sudden are the 10-year mortgages. I have people calling me for 10-year mortgages now.
Really? What are you giving them for interest rates on a 10-year?
3.25%.
3.25% in a 10-year? I'm going to refinance.
With 0 points.
You're kidding.
Now, probably no closing costs might be a little bit higher than that, but it's going to be in the early threes somewhere.
Oh, my God. I'm in a 15-year. We've got 14 years left. I'm in a 15-year.
Well, 15-year right now we're quoting in the 3.75 range.
That's where I am.
With 0 points.
Mm-hmm.
In that range is what you're looking. And then you could drop that into the early threes with a 10-year.
Just think about how much interest rates have fallen and how, you know, when Keith said earlier today that they're back at nearly historic lows, I don't think people appreciate that, what that really means.
Well, I think people are also frustrated because they feel like they're not going to qualify. And I don't assume that unless you know for sure. I mean, I would just definitely, if you're in a situation where you have a 6% or 7% interest rate, I would at least call around just to see, just to make sure. And if you think you're upside down, there's no hope for you, check to see if you could qualify with the Fannie or Freddie program. Of course, the other options, for those that have FHA, you can do an FHA streamline refinance. Those are done quite often. Do those as well. And those don't require an appraisal, or you don't even have to credit qualify for those as well. So that's another option.
And those are pretty great. I don't think you have to wait any time, really, to do a streamline refinance, do you?
You can do it any time. There's no requirement on that. But, you know,
it's just a few hundred bucks, right?
Yeah, well,
not much.
It's a new. Basically you're refinancing into a new loan, and what the lender will usually do is they'll do it as a no closing cost loan. Mm-hmm. They'll build the whatever the cost of the loan into the rate. So you know, it's going to vary a little bit from lender to lender how they do that, but that's generally how it's done.
I have to say, it's kind of amazing where we are with interest rates. You also told me that you're seeing a lot of construction loans. I haven't talked about the 203K loan program in a long time, but tell me what you're seeing out there. That's actually very encouraging to me.
Here's what I'm seeing, and I personally don't do those loans because we have specialists that do them. A lot of people are coming to me, and they're finding properties that need construction. But these people have some vision, and many of them are first-time home buyers, and these are FHA loans. You put 3.5% down, or on HUD foreclosures, only $100 down. You can do a 203K, and you can finance the cost of the construction or the rehabilitation of the property into the loan amount. We do them at Wells, and I can tell you that the guy that does these loans is going crazy right now, the guy in my office, because I'm giving him so many deals right now. So they're very – and you can understand why they would be, because people are finding properties that are that would be beautiful homes if some work was done on them. So that's just becoming a I think the big thing now, right now in my industry. I'm seeing a lot of that going on.
It's interesting that lenders are willing to take a risk on those, but I guess it's, again, backed by FHA, so it's not quite.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's a whole broader topic, but I think if it wasn't for FHA backing those loans, I don't think you would see a whole lot of that going on the market. But these are loans backed by FHA, and they basically follow the same guidelines that FHA has for a normal FHA loan. So it's a really good opportunity for first-time home buyers and that sort of thing to perhaps get into a home that needs some work. Again, but if you're going to get in that kind of situation, know what you're getting into, because these kinds of loans will take more work on your part, because you got to find a contractor and you got to have plans and everything drawn up. And
yeah, it's pretty
and
serious.
That.
You have to you have to really show a lot of stuff. I mean,
now,
I've seen them show. I've seen them ask for budgets. I mean,
yeah, sure. And that won't be a 30-day close.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were saying 15 days. What did you say earlier when we started talking?
No. It's been a long time since I've closed a loan less than 50 days. I hear it does happen occasionally.
I can't believe you're doing 30 days. Honestly, I'm really not hearing 30 days. But
now,
if you can do 30 days, good for you.
I can tell you that I've done them less than 30 days, but really you have to have all the stars aligning in the heavens for you. You got to have a really good borrower who gives you all the documentation you need up front. You have to have a good appraisal. You have to have title that clears. So you can tell that I'm giving you a lot of ifs.
Yeah. Well, again, these days, just to get a loan, I mean, you really have to have all your ducks in a row. And you know, Keith Gumminger was saying, well, you know, you can officially have a 580 credit score. And I said, yeah, but I don't know any lenders actually doing a 580 credit score. Is Wells doing a 580 even on an FHA?
Yes, we do.
Really?
Yes, and I can tell you some of the rules on that.
Okay.
We will go down to 600 without much trouble, as long as it's otherwise credit qualified. And that's a little bit lower than most other lenders. Most other lenders are going to 620 or 640. So we'll go down to 600. Now, below 600, between 580 and 600, we will we'll go as low as 500 on an exception basis. So between 580 and 600, we would do it with 5% down. With below 580, it would be 10% down. It would have to come out of your own funds. Now, that being said, you can imagine we're not doing a whole lot of loans below 600. We're doing some. But not a whole lot. So if you do have below 600 credit score, maybe you have a chance, but it's not great. Okay.
So boost your credit score, guys.
You really have to have a really good shot at an FHA or a VA loan, which I know you have many veterans who listen to your show as well.
Sure, we do.
You need to have above a 600. And believe me, I'm seeing a lot of VA loans lately. So there's a lot of veterans out there, you know, particularly with, you know, there's a lot of people having had military service over the last few years, as you know. But I'm seeing a lot of people taking advantage of their VA loan now.
That's a good, great opportunity.
Yeah.
Mike Rose, Wells Fargo, MikeRoseMortgage.com. If you are interested in learning more about making home affordable, refinance, not loan mods, but refinance, give him a call, get in touch, and he'll tell you what to do next. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
We will talk to you again soon. Stay tuned. Mark Titel is coming by to talk about what's going on with foreclosures and short sales this week. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Although I say that, we haven't actually had time to talk to anybody today. Online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Leave your reactions and comments to the show on today's show notes, which will be up at the blog. Just click on the blog. Today's blog entry should be the show notes, and you'll get Keith Gumminger of HSH's information, Mike Rose of Mike Rose Mortgage, and, of course, now we have on the phone with us Mark Titel of GetOutStartOver.com with his take on what's going on with foreclosures and short sales in the Atlanta area. Mark, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
So what's going on in your office this week?
Well, this week I had a call from the listener of your show, and the lady was a single mother, very desperate on the phone and very upset. So, I mean, she was telling me that she had executed a loan modification, but the home was in such a disrepair that she had no money for the expensive maintenance required for her home.
So she actually, she got a loan modification, which is amazing anyway, but she's not saving enough money on the mortgage to actually pay for, well, what's gone wrong in her house physically?
Yeah, what's happening is their air conditioner is broken, the water heater is not working, the groundwater penetrating from outside, and she doesn't have the money to fix it. It is at the point that the home is no longer inhabitable.
That's not good. It's not good for selling it, and it's not good for the bank. It's not good for her and for her children to live in.
That's right. And she said, well, I don't know what to do. I've been doing everything I'm supposed to do, trying to save my home, and I'm here stuck with it, and I don't know what to do. I got the help. And I explained to her that the situation is a hardship and most likely will qualify for a short sale. The bank will meet her and try to help her.
So she didn't even think that she'd be able to qualify for a short sale?
Correct. And, suddenly, once I explained all to that, she started crying. And I said, what did I say? What did I say to you to make you cry? And she said, well, for the first time, I have a clarity of exactly what do I need to do to get out of the situation and solve my problem.
That must have been such a huge relief for her that there actually is a way out.
Absolutely. And the most important thing is that the banks are really coming around. Let's say we know this week Bank of America came out with their numbers, and what they are telling us that right now, every single month, they're doing more short sales than foreclosures. And right now, they're doing approximately about 9,000 short sales as opposed to 7,000 foreclosure sales.
That's really a big difference. So that's really flip-flop, because for a while, short sales were so stuck that we weren't actually seeing any progress being made. But now, and you told us this a couple of months ago, you said that you were seeing Bank of America in particular, but some of the other lenders as well, cut their short sale times way down from 4 to 6 months to maybe 2 months.
Absolutely. Now we are somewhere then within the 60 to 80 days, which is amazing on its own.
Yeah, 60 to 80 days for a short sale is kind of amazing, I have to say. Well, it's good to know that you're out there, Mark, and really able to provide some assistance to our listeners. So thank you very much for answering her question. And, of course, if you have a question for Mark, you can find him at his website, getoutstartover.com. Mark, we'll talk to you again next week. Does that work?
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
All right. Sounds like a plan. Mark Tytel of GetOutStartOver.com. Well, it's been a fun week, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us. We've had a great conversation about mortgages and how to get mortgages and what's going on in the mortgage market. So next week we have, I'm actually going to be taking a little vacation time next week, but we've got some information for you as well. So tune in next week at 11 for the Elise Glink Show. And don't forget to go online all the time at thinkglink.com. Have a great week, everybody. Speak to you soon.